came.
What's your favorite scary movie?
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Sea dead
people. You're gonna need a bigger boat.
Here's Johnny.
The power of Christ compels you! The power of Christ compels you!
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Welcome to Talking Horror with Jamie and Nikisha.
I'm Jamie.
And I'm Nikisha, and this is Talking Horror with Jamie.
And Nikisha.
Where we share our love for spooky things and talk horror through the lens of human behavior. Welcome, everyone. Yes, today, a great day. We're talking about the 2024 British live-action / adult animated psychological horror film, Stop Motion.
So, the girl runs away through the woods. She finds a house and she hides in it.
And who's coming for her? Maybe a wolf? Like a Red Riding Hood type thing?
It's a man.
What man?
A man no one wants to meet.
That was all via Wikipedia.
It's a mouthful.
Yeah.
It's a mouthful.
That is how they described it, which, okay, yes, live action, yes, animation, yes, stop motion, all the time, every day. So, this film was directed by Robert Morgan in his feature-length debut, and it stars a one Aisling Franchosi. So, heavy spoilers for Stop Motion if you have not seen this. And Jamie, there is a list of trigger warnings. Please give them to us. A list.
Yeah, a full list.
A full list.
Oh boy. I mean, I will say, if you don't like stop motion animation, I think for some people they're freaked out by it. I mean,
it's
like,
creepy.
It is creepy. There's a lot of films that I like. Coraline's a creepy film that is centered around stop motion. I mean, it's not centered around it, but it uses stop motion as the form of media. Mm. So there are scenes with stop motion in it, as Nikisha mentioned, as well as the live action scenes. I would say the stop motion dolls are pretty disturbing looking. And then on top of that, you know, a trigger warning for flesh and blood and bone being used in them.
This became more body horror than I was anticipating. Yeah.
Agreed. Uh-huh. Agreed.
Yeah. So yes, also body horror, dead animals, dead people, lots of references to death, arthritis,
spooky stuff.
Yeah.
If you're scared of tripods. I mean.
And puppets, I will say puppets do freak me out in general. Yeah. So, you know, that's real.
Yes. Your art being stolen by your soon-to-be sister-in-law.
Drug use. Yeah, people stealing your creativity. Drug use, yes.
Self-mutilation.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right.
Insides on the outside.
Lots of them.
And
the magic of cinema.
Yeah. the magic of cinema. The
magic of cinema. Insides on the outside. Yep.
Eating a face.
It's good times.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Mortician's,
I mean, I told you,
wax.
it's a laundry list.
What a new weird thing that I didn't know that was a thing. And now,
wait,
I think
say that
I
again?
Hate
sorry.
It. Mortician's wax.
Oh, yeah.
Did it never knew that that was a thing.
Yeah, trigger warning for learning new things.
Yeah.
About morticians. Yeah.
Unique New York.
Unique New York. Any other ones?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Just lots of dead stuff and stop motion creepiness.
Yeah. That is the general gist. That. Yes. So if this is not for you, maybe just listen to us talk about it and we will for sure give you our high level thoughts about this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But before we get into high level, as Jamie has done for us via the YouTubes, Producer Brian, please give us some words.
Yeah, of course. Words. Hi, everybody. Producer Brian in the house. Yeah. If you want more horror movie info, check us out on all social media sites. Definitely look for us on TikTok as long as it is there. You can check us out on Instagram, and then of course on Twitter @TalkHorrorPod. And then we're on YouTube. Hi, YouTube. What's up? We're on YouTube. Hello. And we are, ready for you to watch. So subscribe to us there. Check it out. We would appreciate it. Yeah, that's all. Cool beans.
Fantastic. Well, you're here because we're talking about stop motion and we need a plot summary of this beaut.
What's the plot?
So, Producer Brian,
are you ready? Yeah, I'm ready, but I'll tell you this. I'm really excited to hear your opinion on this because I don't know if you liked it or not. Because you're getting like kind of like snappy and stuff like that, but that could be because you like really dug it and you're like, or you're just like, this was not for me at all. I'm very fascinated to hear your thoughts on this one, but we should do the plot summary.
Let's do it.
Okay. Let me know.
Oh, I will. So Producer Brian, you have 2 minutes on the clock to tell us everything about stop motion. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Ready, steady, go.
Okay, so there's a girl named Ella. She is helping her mother make her stop motion animation film. Her mother has arthritis. She's very old, but she's a super famous stop motion animator. She has a stroke and is basically in a coma, and Ella says that she will finish her stop motion animation film. I should note that her mom seems to be very abusive and a super perfectionist, and she's been taking that on Ella for her whole life, we're made to assume. Ella decides not to complete the movie because she ends up moving for no reason at all into a new apartment, and she befriends one of the little girls, and the little girl basically convinces her to make a creepy movie about a girl who is lost in the woods, and on 3 nights the Ashman is chasing after her, and each night something different happens. Ella then all of a sudden becomes kind of obsessed with her project. Her boyfriend and her boyfriend's sister are kind of like really concerned about her. It turns out that the boyfriend's sister runs a marketing agency or is the head of a market agency or something like that, and actually stole one of her ideas, and she kind of freaks out about that. But Ella like really gets too deep in the weeds with her movie. She starts using her own dead meat to make the puppets. She uses dead fox to make the puppets. She uses herself to make the puppets. And as this keeps going on, she is basically committed to the hospital because she cuts herself and she passes out and like has a freak out. And then she ends up escaping to go home. And she ends up basically killing her boyfriend and the boyfriend's sister, and then using their bodies to make puppets. And then she ends up dying, finishing the film. And at the end, she's in like a purgatory with it and goes into the box. Not really. We'll discuss the ending and stuff, but that's stop motion.
And that's the plot.
Yeah, that was great.
Good job.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's definitely very nuanced. So I'm excited to also hear everyone's opinion about this. So let's get into it with our first section, likes and gripes.
And now our likes and gripes.
Now, this is all of our first time watching this because this is a new movie that we can add to our 2024 list, which I'm trying to keep a list.
I was excited about that. I will say, if you look online, it's going to say 2023 because it was at Fanatic Fest last year or something like that. But it's wide release this year in Feb, like last month. And it was getting really good reviews, like best horror movie of the year type of stuff. Yeah, I'm really I get excited when we all watch something that came out this year that's not a like big release.
Exactly.
So I like padding out our lists during the year because it really gives us a nice holistic look at, like, it's not just mm-hmm. the Five Nights at Freddy's of the mm-hmm. you know, of the year. It's we're going a little bit deeper in that with all three of us. So I definitely like that a lot. I'm dying to hear your thoughts, Nikisha.
Yeah, no, I'm ready. I'm so excited. So I will also say, to your point, Brian, I am always happy to see something that is brand new, a fresh script, something that is not a book or a remake or mm-hmm. a TV show or a musical into a movie. You know, as much as we love our musicals here, it's like, this is something new. And so it was exciting to watch this. High level thoughts. First thing I thought when I was watching this and the first time that she uses the meat, y'all know by now that I love Bob's Burgers, and it just reminded me of a Bob's Burgers episode where it is literally about the fact that they accidentally spill like 2 pounds of meat on the ground, but the kids want to play with it. And so they make what is called a meat man, and they do stop motion, and they make a whole stop motion action movie with this meat man. And it just immediately reminded me of that when I was watching this.
That is wild. So that is wild that specific example exists.
Yeah.
That's exactly, like, it was very cosmic in the sense of like watching this and it is mm-hmm. actually like a Bob's Burgers episode.
Well, we mm-hmm. should also point out that Nikisha previously mentioned that this was this director's first feature length film. Before that, he's done shorts of stop motion animation, some of them horror. So mm-hmm. like, it was very cool to do this. And then it's funny that like it relates to Bob's Burgers because like the stop motion, like the shorts and stuff. Like, I think that's super funny. But
No, it's great. So overall, I love the theme of this. Mm-hmm. I'll talk about the execution, but for me, what really stuck with me is relating to work stress to create something great mm-hmm. and the need to finish what you started, especially mm-hmm. as an artist. I think that that just hit me in a very specific place. And so I was absolutely down for the idea of like, you're wanting to put something into the world that is your legacy, which is also why I can in a way relate to the mother. Even though I also love the dichotomy, if I'm using that in the right sense, I don't know, but I'm going to say it anyway, of the fact that the mother's legacy should be her daughter, but she's talking about the legacy of her movies. And so I just really loved that idea of like, you have a child that can live out and is doing the exact same thing that you're doing. So she can like live out your legacy twofold, but she is mostly, it seems like in those little snippets that we get of her, that she's just mostly focused on her film and wanting to finish it before she dies and guilt tripping her daughter into helping her.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I love all of that. I thought that the stop motion creatures were so creepy. My gripe was that I wanted more of them. I wanted the movie to have like 40 to 50% more of stop motion things happening in it. I don't know how they could have created that with the theme that they were going with, but for me as a horror, like I wanted stop motion horror images, you know, like.
Did you want more of the movie or like the movie she was making rather, or did you want more of those like weird dream sequences where like the puppets were in the room and stuff? Like, did you have if you got more, did you have a preference of what more you would have preferred?
That's a great question. And I'm going to say I would want both.
Yeah, okay.
I would want more creepy dreams that turned into her making more creepy snippets of her movie that we saw. So okay. I wanted both of that. I love the idea, and this is how I interpreted it, of like the little girl being the inner child of it all and trying to like navigate her trauma into her art. So I love that. I love the sense of there was a comment of bringing dead things to life and having control over things. And as someone who loves to have control over everything, like I related to that. But another thing that took me out of it that is a bigger gripe was for Ella. Yes, yeah. Ella. Because when you said Ella, it reminded me of Ella, Ella, A, A.
Oh my God. That's what I said in my head too.
Oh boy.
Now
I'm thinking that I need to like get tested for ADHD or something because
no, that, I thought that too. I absolutely thought that too.
But her journey into having such a psychotic break, if it was a psychotic break, and we can talk about that too, just didn't seem reasonable with the evidence given in the movie for her to just turn so drastically for her art. And so that's kind of what took me out of it and made the movie. Yeah.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just wanted more reason to why, because it's like, yes, you have the mother aspect of it, but even when she was at the party but didn't take the drug but had that trip, like if her mother, and then her mother dies after that, maybe if her mother died before that and that could have been like the break that was in her brain for her to kind of go crazy, quote unquote, then that would have been more believable for me. But yeah, I just needed more of a reasoning to why that happened.
If I can, that was one of my gripes too, and I'll get into it during mine, but I do want to add here while we're on the subject that I thought her mom died a little bit too late into the movie at one point.
Agreed.
And even if you keep her, she died too late into the movie because she had already kind of like, I understand that was the accelerant for it, but before that I didn't believe her like break into descent and her descent into madness and stuff like that. However, I also think that there was what was missing from her mother dying was like, oh damn, my mother died and I still didn't finish her movie, so I need my movie to be perfect. It was just, there was something missing from the narrative of the mother. There was just there were so many gaps that I as an audience member had to fill in. And I don't mind doing that, but when it's an emotional through line, one of my biggest gripes about this movie is that I was not emotionally invested, and art versus the artist felt phoned in emotionally, even though I agree with you thematically, all the pieces were there and it was fascinating, but there was just a piece missing where like I couldn't invest in the characters, but I was invested in the creativity of the movie.
Yeah, I thought that's a great way to put it, and I agree completely with all of that. Just the theme is great, but the execution of it all.
Yeah, I think that was your thesis when you started. I totally agree with you.
Yes. Yeah. And the last thing I'll say, which was a like, is that I loved when the mother commented on, she called her daughter a puppet as in like a, what's the word? Like a, my love, my darling, God, there's a term for those kinds of names, nicknames.
Like a pet name?
Terms of endearment?
Yeah, that's...
Okay, great. so I loved how she used that, but then actually called her like a physical puppet and said that like, you're just going to be used and then like put back in a box, like just like any other puppet. And then I loved at the very end where when she was done or dying in the purgatory, like you mentioned, Brian, like she actually puts herself back in the box because she is like done with her work. And then even the lining of it was like the lining of a casket. And I thought that was really cool. So it was just really kind of crazy where there was such good, like key moments in the movie. But like you said, Brian, like it just all for me didn't connect in a successful through line.
Yeah, and that moment where she's going into the box, the casket at the end, juxtaposed to the, or not juxtaposed, but like building on the fact that halfway through she was halfway into that box and then pulled out. I thought that was cool. Like, again, visually this movie is stunning, and I think visually this movie does a lot more storytelling than the actual narrative does.
Yeah. I agree. But those are my thoughts. So, Brian, if you want to continue, please keep going.
Sure. I'll keep this short. I thought a lot of my likes were a lot of the close-ups in this movie, like when she's cutting the steak at the very beginning for her mother, feel like stop motion. Like, I thought that was like very cool that like the reality is starting to seep into the artistic side of things and vice versa. when the kid takes the Cyclops and starts, you know, that first time where she meets her and she grabs, the kid grabs the Cyclops off of it and basically like ruins her entire like shot structure.
Yeah.
That was scary to me. That was like the moment in, that was like the moment in Megan, Mithrigan, where Allison Williams opens the vintage toy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like that I would like.
He physically squirmed in the theater.
I love a good creepy kid. I love the visual of the raw meat. I think the character design of the stop motion characters were amazing. I thought artistically this movie is a home run, like a 10 out of 10 artistically. Mm-hmm. I like that she can't tell the mom the story. When the mom asks, like, what's your idea? Like, mm-hmm, she just can't get it out for... And I like filling in the blanks there. Is it, does she think her mom won't like it? Has she never been asked this question before? Does she think that her mom is just going to tear it apart? Like, I like that aspect of things. I like that it was her inner child or her inner saboteur. Like, that little girl was obviously, like... There's the moment where the sister-in-law goes down the stairs and the kid passes her and nobody interacts with her. And obviously later on, she's this enigma showing up in other places. So like that was predictable, but I like stuff like that. So I was all in on that. When she's with the boyfriend and she's pinching his skin like the puppet when they're having sex, I thought that was spectacular. And I needed more moments like that, because to me that was overlap into like losing it and stuff like, and like this is a personal pleasure that she's pulling into her art and work that worked for me really well. All the squelching in the movie, the sound design in this was wonderful.
Oh, the breathing.
And I like that she kills him the same way that she woke him up.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think that was a visual. Again, this movie has spectacular ideas, and I just for pun included, like it was never sewn together in the way that I wanted it to be. Yes. Or stitched together. Okay, here are some of my gripes. Her moving to that new apartment building felt completely plot driven and not character driven. She's like, she doesn't want to live with the boyfriend. It seems like she doesn't make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Maybe the mother is wealthy, but she lives with her mother in that house. Like, I think that the movie would have been more interesting if she was living in her mother's home with all of her mother's stuff around her and her environment is influencing her breakdown and the girl lives next door or something like that. I think that's fine enough. I think that everything else was not necessary. I wrote, damn, those drugs work fast. And then I found out that she didn't take the drugs.
Also that.
I was like, if somebody stood in front of the projection and just stood there during the party, I would have been like, down in front, motherfucker, what are you doing?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then all my other gripes are related to what we already talked about, art versus the artist. And I felt phoned in emotionally and all that. But I do have a question for the group. I have two questions for the group that I'll pose now, but let's answer them after Jamie goes.
Great.
One of them is, what was the egg? What was the thing she ate that was in the opening credits? And then like, she like throws a cracks at the end. I did not understand that. I didn't do any research on it, but I did not understand that thematically or symbolically. So if a listener, if you two have ideas, let me know. If the listener has any ideas, like please write to us on Twitter or Instagram or anything like that. That totally went over my head. And then does he go to the Bad Boyfriend Hall of Fame? Was his idea of like, I'm going home, excuse me, and destroying your set and the movie and deleting it, was that the right thing to do? Does that make him a bad person? Does the fact that he agreed to do it with her like redeem him in that one scene? So I want to leave that out there. So those are my likes and gripes. Fantastic. I did like this movie. I think I liked this movie. It just will not, I just want to end with that. I liked this movie. It was super cool. However, it was not elevated to the next level because of the gripes we talked about. And those are some pretty big gripes for me, knowing how much I like an allegory, a symbolism, and all of that. I was just missing the pieces to get her to the crazy place.
For sure.
Sure.
Absolutely. Agreed. All right, Jamie, give it to us.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of what you both said. I think I like this movie. I'm still like, I'm still chewing on it. I wish I didn't say that. I didn't even think about it before I said it.
Fantastic. The
puns are truly unintended here.
It was meant to be.
Sure. yeah, like I really didn't know what to expect going into this. And like we kind of revealed like way more body horror than I was expecting. The sound design in this is really effective, disgustingly effective. I think that there's a lot of really interesting like mental health and psychological components that are featured in this. Mm-hmm. Not just specifically like mental health focus, but I would even pull back and say like social interactions and dynamics that I think are mm-hmm. thematic that feel real, like this mother-daughter dynamic. You know, it very much feels like this daughter is an extension of her mom and doesn't really have her own identity. And we could talk more about that too. So like just feeling like she's having such a hard time creating herself and like the things that she wants, the things that are driving her.
Absolutely.
It was that like that felt very palpable and real and like a very realistic dynamic. Her dissociation episodes that she had, like there's a lot of these periods of her like losing time, mm-hmm. in, especially in the beginning where like the movie she's making is being recorded, but she doesn't remember doing it. And then like goes back and like watches it and is like, okay, I guess I did this, but like what happened? So like she's losing time. I thought that that was represented really well, mm-hmm. but I don't think they undercut it, but like there's a part of her that's also like aware, her awareness of her losing time and then like continuing to like dive into it makes me question like what's happening? But mm-hmm. I do think mm-hmm. in general that like the way that they present dissociation is really interesting. I also just wrote, what a weird way to present a steak. I think when the boyfriend came in and was just like holding it in front of her, and I was like, never ever has Brian purchased a steak and then walked up to me like in any other space in the house and like wiggled it in front of my face.
Like a dog in a cartoon.
Yeah. It was, that should have been the first sign of like, uh-oh, this is going to be grosser than I want it to be.
Yeah, sure.
Because nobody does that in real life. I just kept writing more things about the steak. Why steak? Steak? I also,
yes.
Speaking on the sounds, I made a note. Every sound is terrible. And by that, I don't mean it was actually bad. It was just like detestable to hear.
Because right.
I think it was really effective. One of the quotes that I wrote down is when she's having the conversation with her mom, because I thought that was a really, well, when she's having the conversation with her mom that probably isn't real, where her mom says to her, you're a puppet caught in their strings. And when they're done with their play, they go back in the box. And just mm-hmm. like, again, there's a lot of like themes and metaphors and all of this. Some that I think are really blatant and obvious, others that I think less so. But I do think that there's a lot of very interesting ideas in this. And mm-hmm. for a feature length film coming from like a very different specific thing, I think that this is like a really solid entry, and it makes me very excited about like what's going to come next after this. I think like you both kind of said, like maybe some fine tuning of like the execution of everything, but like mm-hmm. all of these ideas are really brilliant and interesting and like fairly grounded and real. So like I really appreciated all of those elements. I think I was just like, I was very surprised about the direction with the body horror. Not that I think it's bad. I think that like it then blurs this line of like what's real, what's not real, which I think mm-hmm. also parallels really well with the dissociation of like what happened, what didn't happen. I don't really know. I maybe because I had RuPaul on the brain, but I just wrote, this movie's just about your inner saboteur.
That's Saboteur.
That's Saboteur.
Always out there to get you.
Yeah.
Also, can we just acknowledge the fact that Jamie is accepting of a movie, like, of people actually peopling? Like, a round of applause for that. See,
because that's all I really ask for. That's my type of movie. And whether or not I think this is, like, the best movie ever, like, I don't think it's the best movie ever, but I certainly will recommend this movie to people.
Yeah, I would too.
It's really interesting. But, like, for how off the rails, like, body horror it goes, there's still so much that is grounding this movie in like, human relationships and like, personal identity and, like, self-esteem and all of that stuff that I feel like allows me – that's the buy-in that I personally need to, like, be able to keep up with a lot of movies. So that's just my own personal thing. So, yes, I am very pleased in the peopling. And then, you know, there's some downfall moments that are happening. But, like, it's mostly peopling.
Mostly peopling. Well, speaking of, let's bring back the question about the boyfriend and you talking about the downfall. So, in my opinion, I agree kind of with Brian when you were mentioning, like, when he just kind of went off on her in the hospital and said, I'm just going to break all your things. It's like, sir, what's happening here? Yeah. And this kind of came out of nowhere because you seemed like you were pretty supportive of what she was doing. And she's also, like, in the hospital right now. So let's have, like, a little bit of empathy and compassion. But I did appreciate the fact that he did go after her with his sister and try to kind of stop her from what looked like self – well, what she was self-mutilating. And so, yeah, I think it was, like, a little bit redeemable. Would I want her to get back with him? No, but maybe you can just be, like, a nice friend.
Well, I thought he was a fine boyfriend throughout. And then he had that moment, and fine, not, like, great, not, like, you know, but also not, like, some of the garbage ones we've seen in movies. But, and in that moment, I think that you could tell that the actor was basing his decision to do that on, like, how much he cared for her and, like, he was just going to get rid of this thing so that it would stop, even though it's not thoughtful per se, but, like, I can imagine like, getting fed up and, like, not me, but, like, that character saying, like, I'm just going to, you know, do that. And then, but I think what makes me think that is that he stepped back and he was like, let's do it together. I agree with you. Like, how about we do it together? Even if he knows that she's manipulating him, like, at the time, like, at least he's like, he thinks he has the power to at least delete it with her in the room and stuff like that. Sure. And then, you know, and at the end they, you know, they come and try to, you know, help her or whatever. I will say that regardless, she should have broken up with them because you don't want to be a part of that family with that garbage sister-in-law at the bottom line. You know, like, that's just like, I'm done with you, whatever the case may be. I'm not saying he's great, but I'm saying that those beats in that hospital scene are justifiable to an extent where he's not like a watcher boyfriend or a paranormal activity boyfriend or anything Midsommar. Like he feels like a normal boyfriend who cares even if he's not the best.
Yeah, totally agree. Jamie? What about you, Jamie?
I don't know. I was thinking a lot about that because like then she has that moment where she's like, you're not even a musician. It made me laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Because
I want to say something about that when you're done.
There was something about that moment that I feel like I don't know if I think he's a good boyfriend or not. Because of her, there were so many little things that were happening before that. Like her not really seeming to always be in the mood to have sex with him, but him just kind of being pushy and like there was a lot of nonverbal stuff that was happening that I was picking up on that I was like, I kind of think he's a douchebag. Like, I don't think that he's really a good guy. A lot of the conversations were centered around him, even though he also was like, yeah, for sure. Like we're in it together. Like, I totally support you. Do your own thing. But like, that's kind of why I thought that her comment was funnier rather than just being mean, because I think that that's how she had felt this whole time of like, this guy's just talking about himself in all conversations, and like that, like our entire relationship is revolving really around him. And so then she has like her descent into madness is also like her discovering herself and like doing this on her own independently of anybody else, where like that's part of it, of like, can she ever actually really do this? And that nobody else sees her as someone in the driver's seat. She's always the support. She's always like putting everyone else first and is helping them achieve their thing. And this just, this relationship kind of feels like aligned with that too. And like everyone trying to get her a job, it's never putting her in the spotlight because like they don't really think that she belongs there. But she also, not that she's to blame necessarily, I think a lot of it is based on her relationship with her mom, but like she's never been in a position to be seen in the spotlight. And so everyone then is kind of like treating her in the same kind of way. And she might even believe that that's true for herself. So this is all like a big assumption, but I do kind of think that he's a douchebag just based on like all of those things.
Sure. So as you say that, I definitely agree with you. And I think that goes back to my thought in terms of like, if the movie had executed that better and left less of it for us to fill in the blanks, especially because something I wanted to mention that you talked about is when she calls him out for like, you don't even make music anymore, or you don't make music, you're just like a suit. Like, I wish we had gotten more of his background throughout, because if like he, like I just needed a little bit more from him and what he did, because that would have landed harder. And it would have added to her descent into madness to think that, like, not only does she feel like the beta in the relationship, but like he's talking as if he is an artist, but he's really just like whatever he does, like a manager, a producer, like whatever his actual job is, or in the marketing department for a music company. Like, I don't know. I think more information from that would have fed into the fact that like she's still an artist trying to make her own name and do something, even though she has deep insecurities because of the way her mother treated her. I could have used a lot more of that to inform her story, just in general. And another thing, I've taken it kind of for granted during this conversation, the effects in this movie are spectacular. Like from the taking out the stitches and pulling, and the gruesome, like the beatings and stuff. The special effects in this movie, outside of the stop motion, are just spectacular.
Man, who knew a tripod could be so lethal on the throat? My goodness. Ugh. But that was, that was really good. I agree. Fantastic. Well, let's get into our next section, brains. Tasty. We've already kind of been talking about this, hinting at this, but Jamie, my first question to you is just talking about the pressures of being the child of an important person and how parents can maybe help their kids not feel like they have to live up to their level of fame or achievement.
Great question.
Yay!
Truly a home run of a question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm so proud of you.
Thank you. mother. Thank you.
I just want to squeeze your cheeks with the paste.
Oh, gross. Get out of here.
No. Just squeeze off like the wax. Peel the face off. Love it.
Ugh. Oh, that was so cool at the end where she just
That was very cool.
Was great.
Was ripping her face off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that there probably will be a lot of external pressure, but I think that as a parent, there's a lot of work to be done around like protecting their child and like really encouraging them to forge their own path, and like doing your own thing. I just think that it requires like a lot of ongoing support and like building confidence independently outside of just like, you know, doing the same thing that the parent has done. Whether whether their child like wants to do the same thing. Like they might not. I don't think it's about like discouraging them from what they want to do. I think it's really more about like encouragement across the board. And so like, how are you fostering like this unconditional regard for your child and what they're doing, regardless of what path they choose? How are you supporting them in like, you know, strengthening their skill set in like whatever thing that they like want to learn? I think it's just like, if your child is really excited about whatever it is, like you help put energy into that and support them through that. And like that there might, and like kind of be, I think there's also places to be realistic about like, you know, other people might have feelings and thoughts about like what you're doing, and like they might put that stuff on you. But like, as long as you feel happy and satisfied with what you're doing, like that's what I want for you. I think that like the validation and support from the parent does a lot to build self-esteem and confidence that like whatever pressures might be coming from, you know, media and society and things like that, it might not, like we can't control other people, but like we can control how we then respond to those things. And so like, I think that that's where a lot of energy can go into is like, I don't know. There's a part of it that makes me think about like Nepo kids. Not that I don't think that they all don't have confidence to pursue the things that they're pursuing, whether it's like a direct connection to the thing that their parent has done or further removed, but still like, you know, potentially have the, you know, what nepotism does is like a privilege. But like, I do think that, you know, there's a lot of children of actors who are also actors that like pursue acting, knowing what type of career it can be. And it's like, you have to, it makes me wonder like, what does that dynamic look like with your parents who are successful and like, how have your parents like either supported or like fostered this interest of yours to go into acting as well? That was like the first thing that I was thinking about while like going through this question, but it's not necessarily that, like, you know, sports I think is another huge one. And like whether I or will not say, children.
I'm sorry. Just to piggyback off of that, because it just reminded me of Beyonce and her daughter, Blue Ivy, because that was kind of the exact situation of where Blue wanted to perform with her during the Renaissance concert. And the story is that Beyonce like didn't want her to perform, mostly because she just didn't want her to be put in the limelight in that way, because she knows how people can react to that. But she let her perform. And even though people had a myriad of things to say about Blue's performance, like she still wanted to continue to do it and get better at it. And, and it, you know, Beyonce was like, well, instead of discouraging her from doing that because of what people were saying, was like you said, Jamie, validating her in order to, because that's what she wanted to do. And so it's like, okay, well, let's work on everything so that you can just kind of get better and better at this at 11 fucking years old too, you know, like, I can't even imagine being in that mindset at 11 years old to be like, but I want to do this and I want to keep. It's crazy.
You see firsthand what the actual spoils are. And, it, you know, you get second chances because you're there's a foot in the door already, and you get a bigger audience to see what works and doesn't work and what you need to work on. And you have true professionals at your at disposal. Your service and disposal and all that. Like, it's a very different world. I would argue that sports is the harder one to be a Nepo baby.
Sure.
Because if you can't, it doesn't matter if your dad is the greatest basketball player or your mom is the greatest basketball player. Like, if you don't have the skills to be at that level, you will not make the team. But if you're an actor or an actress or a singer or a performer in some way, like, that's a different story because there are more places to do that than sports. Like, you, it's really just the professional level. And then there are plenty of places to play over the world and like B leagues and stuff like that. But like, if you're not good enough, you will not be on that team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you get the opportunity immediately.
Right. You get to try out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was what it was making me think of is like, yes, I think like privilege and access and things like that are also playing a really big role. But like if ultimately it's like, what does your child want to do and how are you supporting them in pursuing that? And like that I think is the most important thing. Because it's not, we don't really get like, is it entirely clear to us whether or not the main character in this like wants this? Is this what she wants? What is compelling to her about this? Like we never really explore that at all. She wants her own thing within this, but it's hard for me to know, like, does she even want this? So like it's interesting. And that's part of why that was my perception of why I thought she was struggling so much with generating her own independent idea, because like, and not that you can't have like a creative block, but like there was just nothing coming to mind for her at all that like she wanted to do on her own, but she wanted to do it on her own. Like that's what was more important to her than necessarily having the specific idea of like, this is what I want to make of it. This is my big idea for this. It was just like, no, for sure. I just want to do something on my own.
Yeah, absolutely. But I agree with also you just saying it's the part of the parent either way to be validating in whatever they're trying to navigate and figure out, like if they want to do it, if it's this avenue or something else or something along the lines of it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, my last question is, so we all kind of agree that the child was kind of like the inner child or the saboteur, if you will, like you said. And so my question is, can we talk about the balance between listening to your inner child, but also realizing that that child has trauma that you have to work through as an adult in a healthy way?
Another home run of a question. All-timer Hall of Fame of M-Brain's questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the validation, parents. I appreciate it.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like, I love the idea that like this is her inner child, like kind of letting loose, and how much, I mean, I think she even acknowledges like things are kind of getting out of control several times. But yeah, in terms of like, how do you both pay attention to like the stuff that you've been harboring or like the trauma that you've experienced while not allowing it to like fully derail you into and devolve into like what we see. I mean, I think, well, for one, I'm probably going to say therapy, but
Absolutely.
But I also think that, like that's like, I imagine this ongoing battle that she's likely going to have. And like, I guess, let's say that it's triggered by her mom's like declining health and ending up in the hospital that kind of sets this off. That like we don't always know what might potentially be a trigger or like re-traumatizing, like the fact that this inner child is like surfacing now. And so like her not knowing herself well enough, I feel like is part of what makes it so hard for her to know whether or not to trust herself. And like, I think that there's something about like lacking intuition. Like that's like a theme that I think comes up for people is like just the idea of not being able to trust yourself. Like imagine just like not trusting your gut feelings, your intuition. I think that's something that she really struggles with. And I think that that's something that can make it harder for somebody to decide whether or not to listen to these forces. I think it's also what contributes to her like feeding into this idea that like she's not in control. She's not in the driver's seat of her own life. And because like she doesn't trust herself. And so, like, it's easier to kind of relegate power to everybody else around her rather than take ownership of things, because, like, that feels scarier. That feels more vulnerable. I don't know if I can actually do it. That's too much.
Yeah.
So, like, I think for her, there's way more of a struggle to determine whether or not she should, like, lean into what she's experiencing with the inner child or, like, shy away from it. And we do get some of the back and forth, but she ultimately continues to get pulled in. But yeah, it just, it definitely makes me think. And I do think that this comes up a lot for people who have experienced trauma, is lacking the ability to trust oneself following a trauma, because I think depending on the trauma, a lot of people experience self-blame, and like that self-blame really gets in the way of you, like, being able to trust your gut. It's like, well, did I do this to myself? Am I to blame? And so it's like, that is directly like creating tension with like your intuition and like your gut feelings. And you feel like you can't listen to that, like those feelings, those signs anymore, because like, well, something bad already happened to me, so like, why should I listen to that again? So I think part of it is really not just like working through trauma, but I think it's also learning how to trust yourself, learning how to like reconnect with your gut. Because like that is the thing that like does keep us safe. It's more of, what do we do with that information? I think that's part of learning how to trust yourself, is like paying attention to the signs and then deciding how we want to move forward with that. It's like, if you have an interaction with someone and like internally you have like alarm bells going off, even if they haven't done anything that's like explicitly aggressive or like outlandish, but like internally you're just like, that was weird. Like, what are you then doing with the, that was weird, like thoughts and feelings that are coming up? And that's your intuition. Those are your gut feelings. That's what you have to decide how to move forward. And like, there are things that can keep us safe. There are other things that sometimes we ignore. We also like to give people the benefit of the doubt, like very often. I also think there's a lot of like gender dynamics at play of like trying to be nice to people because like we're fearful of something bad happening. And so like we won't necessarily react in certain ways because like it's protective. So I think there's a lot of different thing. And like, you know, this protagonist is also a woman. So like, it's like, I'm thinking about that too. But yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with like trusting yourself. And I just don't think that she trusted herself enough to generate an idea that she thought would be like good enough. She couldn't even speak on it to like several people. So like, I think that's a place to start while also like processing her trauma.
Yeah. And would you also say maybe like being okay with, even if you thought you trusted something and it didn't work out, like that's also kind of part of the process, you know, like you said, not just kind of being down on yourself for like, oh, well, this happened, so now I'm not going to, you know, trust myself at all.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that like people are very quick to put themselves down and like, you know, it's like an unhelpful thinking style to like take this one time where things didn't go well and then like apply it to all situations. Like, oh, I made this mistake. Like, well, now I'm like only going to fail in this thing forever and ever. And it's like, okay, but like maybe like, have you ever made this mistake before? Also, like, you're human. Like, you're probably going to make more mistakes again. Like that is, it's impossible to avoid. It's just part of being a person. And so I think like allowing yourself to make mistakes, but giving yourself grace, like having self-compassion, because you make a mistake, that does not inherently make you a failure. That like people make mistakes all the time, but that doesn't mean that like you yourself personified are a failure. This just might not have met your expectations. This might not have gone the way you wanted it to. Maybe there are things about it that are outside of your control. But like as soon as you start to like overly identify with like something going wrong and like that defines your character, like that then slowly becomes more of your belief about yourself. And like, how does that then continue to come up in other situations? Or like, you might avoid certain things because you're like, well, I can't do that. So like, I'm not even going to bother. So like, it just ends up kind of becoming a huge barrier and definitely also impacts your self-esteem and confidence in yourself.
Yeah. No, I think that's great. And something that a lot of people like need to hear, like you're human. So like that all comes with the territory. That was great. Yes. Fantastic. Well, that's all the questions I have for Brain. So yes, Brian.
I just want to ask you a quick question. Yes. In your life, can you talk about separating art from you, the artist?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that having a life that deals, that involves other things outside of your craft is very helpful for you to be able to distinguish between the two. So a lot of people just talk about having hobbies that are outside of this, just so that you're not tunnel visioned into whatever project you're doing at the moment. And you know, you hear actors of the highest level talking about how they have to take a second to kind of decompress the character that they just played because they were just so into the character. And so they need a moment and a second. And so I think just kind of making sure that you have a balance of doing things that have nothing related to the craft, so that you're able to also have like other life experiences that could add to your craft, you know?
Sure.
Like doing, I like boxing, and you know, I think that in some ways that could be helpful down the line for something else. You know, if someone ever hires me to be a boxer there, or you know, there was like a wrestling musical that was happening.
Oh, shout out to
WWE wrestling, and you know, having just interest in other things.
Please hire Nikisha for your wrestling musical, please,
please, please. But yeah, I just think it just helps you like become a well-rounded human being to just to where you're not so focused on one thing. So cool. Number one answer is just having other hobbies that are outside of what you do.
Cool. Oh, Nikisha, total tangent. I'm going to WrestleMania in April.
What? Is it in Philly?
Yeah.
I am so jealous. Please tell me how it goes.
I'll keep you informed on everything. I don't follow the WWE at all. I'm just going with a friend, and it's going to be great.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be fun. I'll shoot you some names and let me know like if they show up. So
yeah, the one that I know is probably going to show up is Mr. Rock.
Oh, because he's back at it again.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a part owner now. Anyway, tangent. Yes. Let's do some Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
It's the Rotten Tomatoes game.
All right. What do you think this movie has on Rotten Tomatoes? Jamie, you want to go first?
Sure. A 74.
And Nikisha?
I saw the score earlier.
Oh, you did.
I can't play.
Oh, no.
All right. So it's the critics' consensus is an 88%. Mm-hmm. And the audience score is a 53.
Interesting.
Stop motion takes the conflict between art and the artist to chilling, visually thrilling extremes, distinguished by director Robert Morgan's excellent effects work. Yeah, okay. I think that's fair. It doesn't. And what do you think this has on Letterboxd? Again, it's out of 5.
2.8.
3.2.
Good job. And some of our let's see some good thing. Hell yeah, man! One for the sickos. That's a review.
Oh, who said that?
Some guy named Cobb. Some woman named Cobb. I can't really tell from the picture. A wholesome movie about an animator and her passion for stop motion films.
That's great.
Thanks, beautiful users of Letterboxd. Okay, cool. Should we do the four S's?
Yes.
Yes.
Skull Scare Shakes and Suggestions. The Talking Horns, four S's.
All right. The four S's are skulls, scares, shakes, and suggestions. I'm going to pass it to Jamie first, and she's going to tell us 1 through 10 how she felt about skulls, which is human health and mental behavior. Nope, strike that, reverse it. Mental health and human behavior. Scares, how scary was it? And shakes, you know, how much will this stay with you? So, Jamie, why don't you begin?
Yeah, for skulls, I gave this a 6.5. I was pretty pleased with how the people were papling. So that's why I gave it that.
Cool.
For scares, I gave this a 4 because there's a lot of really disturbing, creepy, gross, body horror, icky things that are happening in this film. So I don't think, again,
body, like,
horror. I don't think there was any jump scares, but I just think that, like, it was just deeply disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And then for shakes, right now I'm giving this a 5. Like I said, I'm still devouring it all and just thinking on it some more.
Cool. Nikisha? Mm-hmm.
For sure. Mine are similar. I gave 6 for skulls. Scares, I gave a 3. And I gave a 5 for shakes as well. I'm still munching on it.
Yeah. For skulls, I'm giving this a 6, which is high considering with all the, like, nitpicky we were on that. Mm-hmm. But I think it had the right idea. It wasn't necessarily about her, it was the execution of her.
Mm-hmm.
Scares, I'm going to give this a 3, like Nikisha. Mm-hmm. And then shakes, I'm going to do a little bit more than you two. I'm going to give it a 7 for right now. I just keep thinking about a lot of the body horror and just the creativity and the original voice of the movie. And I'll see if that changes over time. But I would definitely suggest this. As of right now, of all the horror I've seen over this 2024, this is the best one as of today, right now.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yeah, because it's been like Night Swim. We didn't see Imaginary. Lisa Frankenstein.
Yeah.
There's a couple more on there. But this one definitely pops out for me.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
All right, let's do the suggestions. Nikisha, you want to go first?
Yes, I just have one suggestion, and it's starry-eyed for obvious reasons.
Starry eyes is a real good one. Jamie?
Yeah.
Mine is Black Swan.
Oh, yeah, also a great one. I'm going in a totally opposite direction. I'm going to say, like, watch Coraline and Paranorman.
Yes.
Like, yes, Coraline. Watch the, like, those stop motion. But really, what you should be watching is, I believe it's called Mad God. That's a stop motion horror movie that is truly amazing.
Hmm.
Okay.
Interesting.
Definitely have to look into that. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our episode of Stop Motion. You can follow us on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, at Talk Horror Pod. And Brian, where can they listen to us?
You can listen to us wherever you get podcasts. So find us on YouTube. Hi, YouTube.
Woo-woo.
And then you can also find us on.
It did it.
I know. I updated my my software.
Yes.
I updated my. This is just for YouTube. I'm doing things with my hands. Anyway,
yes.
It's
not doing things.
You can also find us on. You can also find us. There we are.
Oh my God.
Some balloons.
get serious. This is
right.
A serious podcast.
You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Rate and review us there. 5 stars, please.
And thank you.
Woo.
Excellent. Cool beans.
Yes.
Cool.
How should we end this, Brian?
Ella.
Hey. Under my umbrella. Always a bop.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.
Bye.